Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
So, but yeah, let's get into I mean, what really is maybe the biggest May of all time, and that's May 2008, kicked off by a movie that I feel like going into the summer, nobody was expecting to be one of the most talked about movies of the summer or of the year. And also, I mean, this is Marvel saying, okay, like we made a big, well, we dipped our toe in the water with X-Men. We made a big splash with Spider-Man while we're holding hands with Sony. We played nice with Fox, and then, you know, things kind of got away from us with the Fantastic Four movie and with Spider-Man 3, and, you know, our franchises aren't being taken care of, so let's just, you know, brush ourselves off and do this ourselves and release Iron Man the first weekend in May 2008 and basically take over the world, especially this part of the world. And things haven't changed since. I mean, really, this is it. This is every summer now, basically. It's Marvel kicking off the summer, making the biggest, you know, the biggest splash of the summer, really, and then everybody else playing, you know, cleanup after that. So Iron Man in 2008.
Yep, May 2nd, 2008, it opened with the Jennifer Lopez vehicle, Maid of Honor, and it did well. Let's just say, and,
yeah.
And look, you're right. Like it became the new kid on the block in a way where it would take over the world. But if you can believe it, Warner Brothers in DC was still the daddy out there. And this is the summer of, and we'll get to like the big, you know, just the overall landscape of what this looked like. But this is the summer of The Dark Knight, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, Kung Fu Panda, WALL-E, and more. For that matter, like this was an enormous summer, like insane level of blockbusters coming out. And yeah, like for me, Iron Man was a huge deal. Like I loved Iron Man. I had graduated college not long ago, and I kind of spent a semester like looking for, you know, a job or like my next step. And so I was in a bit of a transition. So I had some time to see movies and like focus on that. And I loved Iron Man. I loved the fact that the character clicked with audiences the way it did. I loved that Robert Downey Jr. was clearly the perfect casting choice, and I thought he was robbed of an Oscar nomination that year for this performance. It was just such a star remaking, like one of the greatest star remaking roles, or star making roles for that matter, ever. I loved the character, and I couldn't wait to see where we went from there, and I was on board. I was like, I'll buy the Dr. Pepper cans, man. Like I'm all in on this. And I saw it three times at the theater.
Wow.
And I absolutely loved it. And for me, like, you know, Iron Man's not a perfect movie, but it's pretty damn good. Like it's great. It's like for me, still the gold standard for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just a great way to kick things off. It's a great origin story, but, you know, it's a movie that spends a lot of time on its main character. It casts it perfectly and has a great script. And I don't know, man, like, this is, for me, as good as it gets when it comes to kicking off a summer movie season. I mean, you're kicking off a franchise. You're kicking off an entire studio cinematic universe. You're relaunching a career. You've got some of the best action of the year. You've got one of the best performances of the year. I mean, this is like A+ for summer blockbuster.
Yeah, it's very strong. I mean, it's so fun. Yeah, I mean, it's just, my wife and I rewatched it recently, and it was just like, it's so breezy and fun, and it has a simplicity and a directness and a lightness that Marvel really has yet to recapture. I mean, the closest they came, I think, was Ant-Man. And it's sometimes I get a little bit nostalgic for that. You know, I kind of wish they would do a little bit more low-key, low-stakes movies as opposed to the Civil Wars, you know, where everything is changing every minute and everything is blowing up and, you know, villains are trying to kill themselves. I feel like it checks all the boxes, and, yeah, I remember walking out of it like I was having a pretty bad day that day. I mean, it was, this is the summer that I produced my first feature film, and I didn't direct it, so I had a bad time. And so I was so stressed the entire time, and we were gearing up, and I was just like, every day was just another disaster that I had to put out some fire, and I had a day job, and I was about to get married and buy a house and all these other things. So it was a really stressful summer, and the movies were my main escape, you know? And I remember walking into Iron Man like, I'm just seeing this to see it, and then walking out being like, wow, I am excited, and I wish I could turn right back around and go run back into that theater. What I remember at this time was that this May, I mean, really this whole summer, but especially this May, felt like one of the biggest Mays for movies ever, because first you had Iron Man, which was kind of, like we talked about, a bit of a sleeper, and then you had the Prince Caspian, which was a sequel to a pretty big movie and didn't do much of anything. You had Speed Racer, which was, you know, the next movie from the Wachowskis and looked insane. And that didn't do much of anything. And then, of course, you had Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which was kind of, I think, going into the summer, that and The Dark Knight were the two, you know, majorly anticipated releases. But then you also had Kung Fu Panda, which was, I guess, I don't know if there's a lot of expectations for it, but obviously it ended up panning out. So, I mean, looking back, this summer is stacked, but, I mean, it just starts from the get-go with May.
Yeah, and also in May you have the Sex and the City movie, which is a pretty solid piece of counter-programming. It did really well, even up against those just behemoths to start the summer season, and Iron Man really set an amazing tone. It made, I believe, more than $100 million its first weekend, if not a little bit less, so we just knew right from the get-go that this was a monster, and there were probably things to come from Marvel immediately following. I don't think we had any idea it would turn out to be what it is now, but good Lord, it ended up grossing a little more than $310 million domestically, and it was good enough to finish second in 2008 overall. Obviously, it fell short of what The Dark Knight was able to put out in numbers, but yeah, the summer was just insane. You mentioned the ones before, but Kung Fu Panda came at the beginning of June. The Adam Sandler movie was You Don't Mess with the Zohan, which I think made money, actually. The M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Happening, came out. It kind of gets lost in the shuffle for good reason. The Incredible Hulk came out, another Marvel movie.
And I mean, speaking of things that were on the horizon for Marvel, I mean, they wasted very little time getting another movie out.
Exactly. So Marvel was just getting started, obviously, and started strong. The Get Smart movie came out, which I think did okay, but I didn't see it, and I don't know anybody who did. Mike Myers tried to revive his career with The Love Guru and kind of failed. Wall-E came out, obviously a huge hit for Pixar. Wanted came out that summer. Mm. I didn't see that in the theater. I saw it at home. Hancock came out in early July, the Will Smith weekend. You had stuff like Journey to the Center of the Earth. Eddie Murphy had a movie with Meet Dave that didn't do anything, and that made way for The Dark Knight to just absolutely demolish July. And Mamma Mia, another piece of really solid counter-programming that summer, actually did really well, even in the shadow of The Dark Knight. And then you've got Step Brothers. You have a trio of comedies that come out this summer that I think have aged really well for a lot of people. Step Brothers has been the best one, in my opinion. We should only mention this just because we talked about its predecessors. The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor came out in August. You had Pineapple Express. You had Tropic Thunder. And you had, that probably does it really for like the big blockbusters. So, yeah, big summer. I would say good summer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you talk about The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. What a sad ending to, you know, one of the early May kickoff franchises. This was a big summer, and it was so big that a lot of these I had to catch up with on Blu-ray at the end of the year. I remember having almost as much fun, you know, sitting around the house catching up on a lot of these as I did in the theater. I mean, I think Speed Racer, The Incredible Hulk, Hellboy 2 came out this summer too. Baby Mama, I think maybe was a summer release. So a lot of these I remember catching up with later on and having a lot of fun with. Iron Man, Dark Knight, Incredible Hulk, and Hellboy, I remember thinking, this is it, right? Like, this is the end of superhero movies. Like, there's too many. This cannot be sustained. And, that didn't pan out right. Great summer. And, we haven't gotten into Indiana Jones, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But besides The Dark Knight, that's the movie that defined the summer for me. I saw it several times in the theater. It was kind of, this is, like I said earlier, this is a summer I made a very difficult film and on weekends, and life was crazy, and my escape was getting to the theater whenever I could. That movie, Wall-E and The Dark Knight, are the ones that kind of were my therapy through the summer. So, yeah, great summer. A big one for sure. And it kind of continues the trend of the trend that I think 2007 started, where it's just like every summer has just like these massive, you know, tentpole movies every weekend almost. So the superhero trend, was not dying, as we can, testify to the next year, which was the May opener, which is probably my pick for the worst May opener that we'll be discussing. And that's X-Men Origins Wolverine. Am I right? I mean, in terms of that's the opener?
Yeah, that's right. It opened on May 1st.
I remember the hype for it. I mean, not hype, but like the expectations were fairly low. There was a lot of news about it being kind of really bungled by the studio. But I kind of try to remain hopeful. I hadn't seen any Gavin Hood movies before that. And it turned out to be worse than I think anybody was expecting. It was, again, this was another kind of stressful summer for me, and I watched even fewer movies because this time I was directing a film and financing it, so I really had zero money. But this was like a big date night for my wife and I, and we were like anticipating it, and we're like, okay, this is one of the few movies we're going to really make time for. And the dinner was good.
Yeah, good. I'm guessing you remember the appetizers more so than you do much from
P.F. Chang's
and Origins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. P.F. Chang's in a movie?
Yeah.
Man, dude. Feeling it. So it opened May 1st, 2009 with Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, which was a big flop, and then this sort of like, I guess, YA sci-fi movie, Battle for Terra, which I think I, in retrospect, should have seen instead of X-Men Origins Wolverine. I remember the summer because I was interning at a newspaper away from my hometown, and so I spent the summer there, and I went to the local theater, and that's, you know, one of my refuges that year. I was able to just basically see everything on opening night or opening weekend because I was writing reviews for the paper. I don't think I reviewed X-Men Origins, but I definitely saw it, and it sucked. You're right. Like for many, many reasons. And, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. It kind of starts, I remember that opening scene where he starts explaining to his random girlfriend there at the beginning, like what his name Wolverine means in terms of, I don't know, there was something about like howling at the moon or something. Yeah. I can't remember. So it was a disaster from the get go. It's probably considered the worst overall. If not Marvel movie, then definitely X-Men movie. Worst of that franchise. I think people would even call this worse than X3. I know I would, because I like
X3. Oh, absolutely.
But,
X3 is totally serviceable compared to this, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it sucked, and you're right. Like, we kind of knew it going in that there were problems. And, I mean, starting with the title, too. I mean, it's a mess. But luckily, a week later, all was forgiven. Because J.J. Abrams kick-started the summer in the way that we really needed it to. And I wish that Star Trek had been the summer movie kickoff, but
yep.
Blockbuster, but, you know, we had to suffer through one to get to that. And you know, if I guess we can have selective memory and call Star Trek sort of unofficial blockbuster starter.
Yeah, I mean, because it totally matches that tone that they should almost always have. You know, it's not heavy, it's effervescent, it's fun, it's optimistic. I mean, that's kind of what I feel like I'm looking for in these May openers. You know, if The Dark Knight was a May opener, it would be a little bit tough to swallow, you know. But yeah, Star Trek is such a fun and poppy and fast-paced movie that, yeah, we definitely made time for this one. And it was a great, you know, palate cleanser from the week before. And, yeah, in my opinion, kind of the movie of the summer.
Yeah, and I think it's probably the movie of the summer for me, too. Maybe I'll remember it differently as we go through the schedule. But X-Men ended up grossing $180 million. It was the 13th highest-grossing movie of 2009. The highest grosser of the summer that year was Transformers Revenge of the Fallen with more than $400 million domestically. And it was a big summer too. It was it was a big year in general. Like I said, I went and saw pretty much all the big releases on opening weekend, and 32 movies ended up grossing more than $100 million domestic, which is a big number, on the higher end of the spectrum. But if we run through the rest of the summer here, if you want to jog your memory a little bit, after Star Trek, we got Angels and Demons. We got, after that, Terminator Salvation. We got Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian. After that, we got Drag Me to Hell and Up on the same weekend. What an awesome freaking weekend for movies. Yep. I saw both of those opening weekend, and they were both fantastic. After that, we were cursed with The Hangover, which we get two more of. After that, Land of the Lost, which was kind of a misfire from Will Ferrell, I guess sort of approaching his decline as a big blockbuster movie star. After that, we got The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 remake from Tony Scott, which was, you know, serviceable if unnecessary. We got a romantic comedy in The Proposal, which was a big hit, and it dominated another comedy that same weekend in Year One, which was a big flop from the late Harold Ramis. We got Transformers Revenge of the Fallen shortly after, and just sort of rounding out the rest of the summer, we get an Ice Age movie, we get Public Enemies, we get Bruno, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which is my favorite Harry Potter movie. I loved it. 500 Days of Summer. Let's see. Funny People, which is kind of a new thing from Judd Apatow at the time, the G.I. Joe Rise of the Cobra, and Julie and Julia. I mean, this is a pretty stacked summer just in terms of, like, the volume of movies that we were getting. District 9 came out that August, and then Inglourious Basterds came out later that August. So it was pretty spread out just in terms of, like, how many movies we got, the kind of movies we got. We got some different blockbusters and stuff that we weren't quite as used to, in terms of, like, sci-fi and horror even, and period films like Public Enemies. But we still got much of the same stuff that we typically get in terms of sequels like Transformers, which was the biggest grosser that year. So it was a different and I would say overall a pretty good summer. I saw a bunch of movies at midnight, which sucked. I hate seeing movies at midnight, but I did it because there was just nothing else to do. So that's kind of what I remember about the summer. So, yeah, for me, I either go Star Trek or Up, and I've got a lot of love for Drag Me to Hell. But, I mean, my favorite movie of the year was Inglourious Basterds. I just don't look at it the same way I do those traditional summer movies.
Yeah, I feel like the buzz for that was so late that, it's hard. I always forget that. I mean, it totally is a summer movie, but I always forget that it was. Star Trek is the one here. I mean, I'm a big fan of Up, Drag Me to Hell, and Half-Blood Prince, but yeah, this was a bad summer for me. I mean, it was all the great stuff was very spread apart, and then the bad stuff like G.I. Joe and Terminator Salvation and Revenge of the Fallen, it was really, really, really bad. And it just felt like a big step down for me. And again, a lot of these I caught up with on Blu-ray, and I think all three of those I definitely didn't see. I think the only movies I saw in the theater were Star Trek, Wolverine, Up, Drag Me to Hell, and Half-Blood Prince. I think those are the only movies I saw in the theater this summer.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, like I said, it was a scarce time for money and time and concentration. But the next summer, it got so much better. The next summer, I was unemployed. I managed to see a few more movies just because I had more time, and was freelancing as a video guy, which was miserable. And the opener was, again, keeping up the superhero trend, and again, Marvel putting down its foot and kind of staking a claim, was Iron Man 2, the much-anticipated follow-up to Jon Favreau's first movie. What day did that open?
May 7th.
I saw it at the beach, which is a great way to watch any, you know, summer movie, especially a fun Marvel one. And I liked it. I felt like something was missing. And I hated it on rewatch and then kind of liked it again on rewatch, you know, like it's a movie that depending on the day, I can take it or leave it. But right now, today, I fall on that, you know, pretty decent summer opener.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice way to start the summer off. And no, it's not as good as the first movie, but it checks enough of the boxes, I think, before the buzzer sounds. You know, like there's a really exciting action sequence towards the end of it where I think we would have been left wanting more had it just not swooped in and really delivered on some really awesome action. And, you know, it's another great showcase for Robert Downey Jr. and that character. And we had all just really fallen in love with him the movie before. And I think we all just wanted more Tony Stark. And I think that's what the movie's mission was just to give you, you know, sort of an unfiltered Tony Stark, Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. experience, maybe in a different way in terms of how Jon Favreau wanted to experiment with dialogue and take some chances. So, and it's actually not a super traditional blockbuster for that reason, among a few others, because it doesn't have a ton of action. It's more of a comedy, I think, than it is a straight action movie, which is interesting. I think it had a great Mickey Rourke performance. Sam Rockwell's really fun. So, and it introduced a lot of new things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think Iron Man 2, I think it gets a bit of a bad rap. I know a lot of people consider it one of the worst Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I prefer this movie to Iron Man 3, to be honest with you. And what's interesting about this movie, like you said, Marvel's putting its foot down and is continuing to become the giant that it would be and that it is right now. But Iron Man 2, while it was huge and made a ton of money and had a enormous opening weekend, still wasn't the number one movie of 2010. Later in the summer, we'd get Toy Story 3, which absolutely obliterated the competition. It outgrossed Iron Man 2 by more than $100 million domestically.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, Iron Man 2, it's like three movies, you know? It's the superhero movie, superhero, supervillain revenge movie that I think is really good because of Mickey Rourke, you know? It's that movie, then it's like this sitcom with Tony Stark where, you know, they kind of have the Jack Sparrow thing where the first movie, you know, everybody fell in love with that character. So in the second movie, they just like do everything they can to serve that actor, that performance and that character, and kind of goes overboard. And then it's also the setting up the Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. So it's like three forces kind of pulling at each other, and that's, it shows, but I think it gets points for effort for sure. The rest of this month, I remember, I mean, this summer, again, because I was in, you know, a stressful situation. Again, the movies were kind of a safe haven, and I think I actually blogged this on Film Nerds, where I carved out the summer, made sure we had the money and the time scheduled, and I said, okay, me and my wife have there's a chance that we could really be too busy to pay attention to each other, you know, in this trying time for our household. So I was like, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to make sure we see a summer movie at least every like 2 weeks, maybe every week. And I like paired it with like a restaurant, and I made sure, you know, so it was like something I was like trying to really be proactive in making sure we had the time, and then made sure we got to the theater and had some fun. So I think I ended up seeing a lot this summer. Unfortunately, I don't remember there being a ton of great stuff. Now, the stuff that was great, but May, the only other thing I remember from May is Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, which I remember, like, hoping to God it was good, because I, like, we decided to run a 10K together that morning, and I was like, this movie is going to be, like, my reward for running a 10K, and, it wasn't a very good reward. I think that was Memorial Day weekend, but I'm sure there's some other stuff I'm missing in May.
Yeah, you know, I remember seeing Prince of Persia, the trailer, like 5 million times. It was like that movie where it's like, if you go see a movie this weekend, you're going to see the Prince of Persia trailer. And it got beat out its opening weekend by Sex and the City and Shrek Forever After in its second week. So things didn't work out for Prince of Persia, unfortunately. But later that month, we got MacGruber, which is friggin' hilarious. That same weekend, Shrek Forever After opened. You had Sex and the City 2, Prince of Persia. You had, in June, Get Him to the Greek, the follow-up to Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which is okay. I'd say that, you know, whatever. Russell Brand happened, didn't he? You had the A-Team, which I saw, I think.
Yeah.
I don't remember, like, 1 minute from that movie, if I'm being totally honest.
Sky Tanks.
Okay, if you say so. You had Jonah Hex open the same weekend as Toy Story 3. So Jonah Hex arrived, and then it, like, disappeared into thin air. Like, it never existed. Sorry, Josh Brolin. Then you had Night and Day, which was a disappointment for me. I think you probably like it a little more than I do.
A little bit. I mean, it's fine. It's the action scenes are good.
Okay, and then Grown Ups was the Adam Sandler movie. He never got tired of making movies. He just kept going. And I'm sure there were more to come. The Last Airbender, which I know you watched last night.
I did.
Opened Despicable Me, and The Minions came out that year. Predators up in that same weekend. Predators kind of went nowhere, so we're getting another Predator reboot here pretty soon, which, you know, whatever. Nicolas Cage sort of reappeared with this movie, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Nicolas Cage and Jay Baruchel took the weekend by storm. Actually, it didn't, because Inception opened that same weekend, and Inception just dominated movie conversation and the box office for the next few weeks, and it's still awesome, funny enough. So you had one of the worst movies of the year in Dinner for Schmucks that also came out a few weeks later, which was, you know, on paper, it seemed great, with Jay Roach directing and Steve Carell and Paul Rudd and Zach Galifianakis Jemaine Clement, I believe. So, yeah, I'm spending way too much time on this horrible movie. And after that, in August, The Expendables came out, The Other Guys, the Will Ferrell movie, and...
Big one.
What was that? And what?
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, Scott Pilgrim, yeah. Scott Pilgrim came out, and I think that's, like, it for, like, the really big stuff, so...
Wow, now that you mention all that, I didn't see that many movies at all. A lot of those sound terrible, and I still haven't seen a lot of them.
I mentioned Toy Story, didn't I?
You didn't mention it in the schedule. I think that was June?
I don't see it, like, even listed on the schedule here. It must be a misprint, because you're right. It came out June 12th, or June 18th.
Yeah, it was definitely before Inception. I mean, I feel like it was like the big movies were nicely spaced out, you know? You had Iron Man in May, you had Toy Story in June, and then you had Inception in July. And then everything else you can just kind of... And then Scott Pilgrim in August, which obviously we're kind of in the minority of people that actually watched that movie in the theater. You know, what was there was nicely spaced out, but everything in between was pretty pretty flat. The only other ones I remember seeing are The A-Team, which was totally fine. Night and Day, which is totally fine. Like, it was, like, a perfect, like, both of those are perfect, like, all right, just show up to the theater and sit in air conditioning as if we don't have air conditioning anywhere else and just consume a movie. And then Predators, which I actually think the first, like, quarter or even half of that movie is really good, and then it just, then Lawrence Fishburne shows up and talks to himself, and that's it. So, yeah, it's pretty flat summer, but that said, it has Inception, which, yeah, you know, was, for me, probably the biggest, I mean, no, you know, surprise, the biggest summer movie since The Dark Knight. It was one of the last, maybe, yeah, it was definitely the last movie that, and again, being unemployed probably helped with this. It's a movie me and my friends saw it at midnight and then went to Waffle House to talk about it like until dawn. You know, that's like, it's like such a college thing to do that, you know, if I did that now, I would die and I would not recover for weeks. But you know, that was a very memorable experience, and I think Inception still holds up as a really fun and smart summer action movie. And this was a big summer for you personally, right? Didn't something happen?
Yeah, I got married this summer. That's right. Actually, today, 7 years ago, as we're recording.
Oh, dear Lord. What are you doing? Yeah. Why are you talking to me right now?
Well, we got jobs. So we didn't take the day off, but yeah,
it was big.
I actually recorded a podcast live the morning of the wedding. Woke up, my brother, my co-host Corey, we went to WVUA and recorded a show about best movie weddings that we love.
And didn't Graham gift you a Blu-ray player like on the air or something?
I don't think so. I think Corey gave me a Blu-ray, maybe gave me Traffic Blu-ray. I don't know if that's right or not. I might be misremembering here, but yeah, it was a surreal experience for sure. But a great, great year. I definitely remember it for reasons other than movies. But you know, what's interesting about 2010 is it's similar to 2005, where the summer isn't very strong, but you remember it as such a strong movie year overall, and like the real big guns didn't really come out until later in the year, because I mean, we get stuff like The Social Network and True Grit and The King's Speech. Shutter Island was earlier in the year, but mm-hmm. we get you know, just a ton of really awesome movies that would come out later. But yeah, I mean, Inception was one of those great movies that year. Toy Story 3 was also one of those great movies. So, you know, if it's got just absolute smashes like those, it can't be remembered as a terrible summer. But you're right, there were a lot of really bad ones sort of sprinkled throughout. And Scott Pilgrim, I think, belongs in that conversation too. It's great. Like on rewatch, that movie just always gets better. And it was a lot of fun the first time too, on the big screen, like with great sound and everything. So it makes me sad that people weren't able to watch it in the theater the first time around. But yeah. So again, like you're right. Like the big hits were so good that it's hard to categorize this as a bad summer, but the numbers definitely work against it just in terms of the volume of movies.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, an honorary summer movie this year is How to Train Your Dragon, which we saw in the Dollar Theater, I think, but was like one of the most fun experiences I had in the theater that year. And it feels like it should have been a summer movie, and it made a decent amount of money, obviously. So that's an honorary pick, even though it was like, I think, a March release or even late February, maybe. So the next year, the Marvel machine is in full swing as they kick off a year of two Marvel summer movies again, and the first of which being Thor, I remember seeing the trailers for it, and they looked so bad and looked so dark and grimy and cheap that I was like, man, and I wasn't crazy about Iron Man 2. I was like, man, Marvel is dropping the ball. And so I feel like we were kind of getting into we're getting on thin ice with Marvel at this point, but I was probably in the minority because I think Thor made a decent amount of money, and this is kind of a turning point year for Marvel because everything is in full swing as they build towards the Avengers. I'm right? Thor was the first one of the summer. I mean, Fast Five was like a few weeks earlier, which was, you know, feels like a summer movie for sure.
Thor was technically the first. It opened May 6, 2011, but the next day Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides opened. So they shared the weekend.
Bizarre.
Which is really interesting. They both did really well. Pirates, obviously, I think it made $1 billion overall. Only $240 million domestic, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird phenomenon. The biggest grosser of the summer that year was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And Thor ended up making $180 domestic and like $450 million worldwide. But you're right, Fast Five opened. And Fast Five, I think we both consider the best of that franchise, opened like the day before the summer started. Like it was April 29th that opened. So it was basically the kickoff. You know, it was like first weekend of May anyway. So, you know, I guess that counts. So the summer itself was, you know, it was interesting. Thor, Pirates of the Caribbean, Midnight in Paris was also out. Obviously not a blockbuster, but a big hit nonetheless.
Sure.
That people really enjoyed. Funny enough, The Artist also came out that summer, the eventual Best Picture winner, but obviously not a big blockbuster. Tree of Life, the same. So we're getting a lot of, like, big indies and, like, movies that'll wind up on a lot of best of the year lists. We're getting those like in May and June, which is kind of weird. And Drive also that summer. So this is just like the summer of the indie, but we start to get into the blockbusters. You get Kung Fu Panda 2, which is a big hit. X-Men First Class, sort of a reboot for that franchise. The Hangover Part 2, which was bad. Super 8, which was a really interesting summer movie for sure. I mean, just considering, gosh, I mean, J.J. Abrams had made Star Trek just 2 years ago before this, and then obviously Mission Impossible 3 years before that. So really interesting trio of movies there from J.J. Abrams, sort of like three summers out of like 5 or 6 years. Really, really good run for him, I think. And I think, you know, in retrospect, Super 8, it's a really good movie. I mean,
it's great.
Yeah, it's a little underappreciated, I think, even if, you know, some of the monster stuff's a little, I don't know, hit or miss. But later we get the Smurfs, we get Green Lantern, we get Cars 2, we get Transformers Dark of the Moon, which I know that you love.
Wonderful. Especially the second half. Come on. It sucks.
It sucks.
Gorgeous.
It's terrible. It's as bad as its worst stuff. So, Horrible Bosses is a comedy that came out. We get the Harry Potter movie. Captain America, the First Avenger, comes out July 19th. We get Cowboys and Aliens, poor John Favreau, Crazy Stupid Love, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was a big surprise for me personally. I loved it. It was great. The Help comes out. Conan the Barbarian didn't really go anywhere. Aquaman was in that. 30 Minutes or Less. And yeah, it closes with the George Clooney drama, The Ides of March. So, yeah, overall, 2011, not the best.
Oh, I think it was a pretty strong summer. A lot of fun stuff. I mean, I'm not sure if I would consider anything like, you know, Dark Knight level in there. But, I mean, you've got a lot of really, really strong stuff.
I don't know about a lot.
I mean, in terms of, like, I had a great time in the theater, and I've rewatched these movies and have fond memories. So you got Thor, Captain America, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Super 8, and the second half of Dark of the Moon. There's some other stuff, Fast Five, if we're counting that, for sure. There's a lot of fun here. I remember this is good stuff.
X-Men First Class was fun.
Yeah, it definitely parts of it were really satisfying. It's one that it doesn't sit well with me, but yeah, if I'm going to count Dark of the Moon, you know, I can count X-Men First Class for sure. So yeah, I think a lot of really good stuff, but it does totally feel like a setup year, you know? It's like, all right, here's, you know, we're going to try a Thor movie, we're going to try a Captain America movie, we're going to try a new Apes movie, we'll just kind of see what happens, and then a lot of them made decent amount of money, so then the franchises kind of go off of that. I mean, the bad stuff is, again, pretty bad. Again, like, the worst parts of Dark of the Moon are the worst things you'll see in life, maybe. And then on Stranger Tides, it was real bad. Cowboys and Aliens, I don't even think I saw in the theater. But, yeah, so, I mean, there's the bad stuff is bad, for sure. But I think there's enough fun stuff to... I think it's a better summer than 09 or 2010. And I think... In a strange way, I mean, this is a theme that we keep kind of coming back to. I think Thor is a good trendsetter for that. You know, that's a hit or miss movie that ends up being fun and a plus column. And that's exactly how I would categorize summer 2011.
All right.
And I think it's worth mentioning that every summer from here on out, both of our lives were probably pretty normal and boring. So there's less emotion that goes into any of these. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I just,
we're adults, like, after this point, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, Thor was one of the weaker Marvel movies for me. Like you said, the Pirates movie wasn't good. The Transformer movie was terrible. Like, there were just a lot of bad ones here for me. I mean, you mentioned the good ones for sure, but even the good ones from the summer, like, and even like, I like Super 8, I like X-Men First Class, I don't like them near as much as I do other J.J. Abrams movies or other X-Men movies, so it's like a passing grade. You give it a pass, but it's, I don't know, it's just, it's not a highlight summer season for me.
Fair enough. The next year, I think, was a very strong summer, kicking off with what obviously, it's the culmination of all of these things that were all of the whole Marvel phenomenon and superhero phenomenon in a way. And it's my pick for the best May opener ever. It's Marvel's The Avengers in a summer that also gave us a new Christopher Nolan Batman movie. And, well, we have those two things, so who cares about anything else?
Yeah, it is big. And, you know, I want to make a one quick note here. As Wikipedia notes, they say 6 box office blockbusters from previous years were re-released in 3D and IMAX in 2012. Those were Beauty and the Beast, The Phantom Menace, Titanic, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Finding Nemo, and Monsters, Inc. So I don't know if that reflects, like, a lack of confidence going into the summer for some people, surely not for Disney, because at this point, the Avengers, like, Marvel and Disney were as one, right?
Sure, yep.
Yeah, so if you had the Avengers coming out, I don't think you lack for confidence. And
yeah,
it was
the Dark Knight.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm with you. The Avengers is huge. It's on my top five for sure, and you're right. Like, it makes a case. It's just like, what more could kids and just people possibly want from the movie to kick off the summer, and it dangerously, like, the summer dangerously peaked too soon as a result of the Avengers, you know, where it's just like, wow, we got our rocks off on day one. What can measure up to this? And I think, you know, the rest of the summer found that to be relatively true. And you and I are big fans of The Dark Knight Rises, so that probably wasn't necessarily the case for us, but it opened with the best exotic Marigold Hotel, which is another decent example of counter-programming. So good on that studio. I believe that was Fox Searchlight that released that. So the Avengers just dominated just poor competition in its wake throughout June, pretty much. Like, it had its way with the box office for, like, a month plus. It ended up grossing $623 million domestically. I think it hit the billion mark for sure worldwide. So it was definitely the summer of the Avengers, and yeah, the movie still definitely holds up. It established Joss Whedon as a totally respectable, if not more so, auteur, and somebody who really changed the voice of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the better. It was definitely influential in terms of how people made blockbusters moving forward, in terms of the humor he injected into the characters. He obviously cared about the characters, and that's what drove it. And it really spent a lot of time building those characters, giving them depth before we really got the sort of meat of the action that we would get, and one of like the best just like full on extended action sequences that we had seen in a long time, with all of these characters hitting on all cylinders, working together. It was just like, it's what you, as a comic book fan and as an action movie fan, what you dreamed of seeing. You know, like, we were actually seeing all of these characters fighting bad guys in the middle of New York City. Like, it was just like, wow, we never thought we would ever see that, but here it is. It looks great. The action's great. It checked all the boxes. So the Avengers can't be seen as anything other than a just total knockout punch for not only Marvel and Disney, but just for movies in general.
Yep, it's just pure candy. You know, it's totally consumable, and it holds up so well. It's one of those movies that can, whatever, you know, there's, I can acknowledge some flaws, but it's still, and for me, it's a perfect movie just because it's so, the experience is so well crafted and it never slows down.
What's the flaw? Like, what you say, whatever, some flaws, like, what are the flaws you're talking about?
You know, I mean, there's the whole thing. I mean, the opening is a little bit flat. You know, you've got the convenient Hawkeye heel turn there. You got Loki in the back of a truck. You know, there's little things like that where it's like something about this feels a little bit cheap or something, or rushed, but you know, whatever, it gets through that quickly, and it's so cool and it's so well staged that it's hard to knock. So yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, I can, like I said, the people can punch some holes in it, but the experience, the overall experience, is just so good that those things don't matter.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you. I mean, you're right. The opening is definitely a little flat. I totally agree with that, but it more than makes up for it, for sure. And what's great about the Avengers for me, like, I think, like, my big takeaway from it was it's all so much fun, but this was like the first time like the Hulk really,
yep,
really worked on screen, and somebody really got the Hulk, and it was as fun as you thought he could be, and more. So I love the Avengers for that, if nothing else. So yeah, definitely.
The moment where he transforms into the Hulk as he punches the big whale shrimp space thing is one of the great movie moments, in my opinion. Like, I could watch that whole scene over and over and over again and never get tired of it. It's Joss Whedon just orchestrates that like a master.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Hawkeye thing, and it just reminded me that we're not, in the years that we've discussed here, like the last 5 or 6 years, not many wrestling crossovers here, just in terms of like wrestlers popping up in the movies, and that makes me a little sad. But
the Fast Five, you know, was The Rock's kind of like re-debut on the big screen, on the big stage.
Yeah, I don't count The Rock at this point, I don't think, you know?
The Fast Five was, all right, quick tangent. I think that was the same year as, I feel like,
the Marine 3?
No, was that the same year that he came back to, I think that was the same year he came back to, like, host WrestleMania. So there's definitely a part of me that, like, saw Fast Five, like, heard The Rock was back into wrestling, was like, maybe I should start paying attention to this stuff again. And it that's kind of where it started, where I started to pay attention to that thing that we aren't going to talk about anymore. But
yeah, I was not. I was off the stuff at that point. So
they're on the wagon.
Oh, yeah,
anyway,
2 years later, it'd be bad news. So the rest of the summer, again, I mentioned Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, the James Mangold Hotel. Dark Shadows would come out, which is really not a bad movie. I watched that after. I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it on Blu-ray or whatever, or HBO, I don't know. It's actually not a terrible movie. I think I can recommend Dark Shadows overall. The Dictator, which was kind of a flop. I don't really remember the numbers it did, but I will. Battleship came out with...
Battleship.
Yeah, not the best, I guess. Looking at the rest of it. Like, seriously, like, it's sad. Like, the rest of May is really sad because they were just like, we don't want to F with the Avengers. Men in Black 3 came out.
Oof.
Yeah. June started with Snow White and the Huntsman, which did well enough. Madagascar 3 came out. Prometheus came out. Rock of Ages. The Adam Sandler movie was That's My Boy. Oof. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
God.
The Pixar movie was Brave, which is awesome.
There we go.
And
yep.
I'll fight people on that one. You had Madea's Witness Protection. You had Magic Mike.
There you go.
You had Ted, which was those were comedies that did really well. I mean, Brave was a big hit. Magic Mike, Ted, those were R-rated comedies that did really well, which is interesting. Amazing Spider-Man would open July. Savages, the Oliver Stone movie, which I saw opening weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, man, it's Oliver Stone, okay? There's an Ice Age sequel. Then The Dark Knight Rises comes out, and it's like, whoa, okay, well, this is like crazy that we have these two just like insanely, enormously huge superhero movies out in the same year. Like, maybe we did at the time, but I don't think we really appreciated like how special that was, you know? So yeah, and despite like people like look back on The Dark Knight Rises and say, oh, it's, like, it even has people who like might even say something stupid like it sucks or like it's the worst of the trilogy. It actually got really good reviews. It made a ton of money, and I don't know, like it's hard to look back on The Dark Knight Rises without just automatically and immediately comparing it to the phenomenon that was The Dark Knight, and it'll always sort of like live in that shadow. But my goodness, The Dark Knight Rises is freaking awesome. Like I wanted to come out of it, I think, because you know at the time I liked Iron Man, and you know The Dark Knight. There were things about The Dark Knight that just really irked me, and I couldn't get over them for a while. I can look back on it now and really appreciate it for what it was, for sure. But I wanted to walk out of The Dark Knight. I wanted to go into it and walk out of it saying, I like that better than The Dark Knight. And I think that's what I said, and I really love it. I don't know today, now that we're 5 years removed from it, if I would say it's better than The Dark Knight. It doesn't necessarily have the same heft. It's not as fresh necessarily just because it was 4 years after its predecessor, but it's freaking awesome. And I hate to go on that tangent, but I don't appreciate The Dark Knight Rises hate that's out there.
No, I mean, look, The Dark Knight is one of my favorite movies of all time, and there are things that The Dark Knight Rises does better. I mean, it is so satisfying. In my opinion, it's the most rewatchable of any of the three movies. It's like 9 hours long, but every time I put it on or walk in the middle of it, I sit down and I start watching it because it's such a big, sprawling movie, and there's so much going on. And yeah, it just feels big. It's a special movie. It's maybe the last movie we'll ever get on this scale that uses like, you know, 1,000 extras in one place at one time. You know, it's just the way that Nolan determined to make this movie is awesome, you know, and it's something you're not going to get very often anymore, if ever. I think it's a special movie, and people that hate it offhand are trained to look at movies in a way that reduces movies to Twitter talking points rather than actual movies.
I agree, and like you said, the scale of it was great, and you know, we might not get that at least until the next Christopher Nolan movie, Dunkirk, which seems to employ a similar scale just in terms of like how many human people and bodies we see on screen at one time, and that's just like what all can you fit in the widest frame possible, and that's just a really awesome. It's really awesome that somebody, you know, still cares to try to do things like that in movies without, you know, clicking a mouse pad, you know, and like doing that in the computer. Later in the summer, we got The Watch, which was a big flop sci-fi comedy that was directed by Akiva Schaffer, co-written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, starring Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Jonah Hill, and a bunch of other people in cameos, I guess. So that was kind of a what? You know? Like, what the hell? Total Recall opened that thing from the guy who made the Underworld movies, and so whatever.
The Bourne Legacy came out, which I know. Yeah, you know, it's fine, but
it's totally
Bourne
fine.
Bourne fans would rather forget it happened. The Campaign, the Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis political comedy that came out that year. The Expendables 2, Paranorman, and I think that's it.
Yeah, not a great summer, which is because this kind of scuttles the theory, you know, of, well, a great May opener means that the whole summer is going to be strong. Because, yeah, out of what we talked about, I think we've got the event, all the superhero stuff is good, if not great. You know, I think Avengers, Dark Knight, and Amazing Spider-Man are all good to great. And that's kind of it. And then Brave is really good. And then you got, like, yeah, Magic Mike is strong. But that's kind of it, right? And nothing else stood out for me. Prometheus was a big disappointment. I saw it twice in the theater for some reason. Ted is awful.
No, it's not.
Okay. It's not
Magic
awful.
Magic Mike is good. The Avengers
good.
Is great. Dark Knight Rises, Brave is great. Like, those movies are just, like, so huge that everything just sort of, like, crumbles
in your
path. You know?
Yeah, it feels like a great summer, but it maybe isn't.
I mean, it has to be considered a great summer if those came out, though. Like, the Avengers summer is a great summer. But, the problem is that, again, you talk about peaking too soon. Like, the Avengers is a perfect May opener, but my goodness. Like, and it's not on Disney to make sure, like, the summer is as well-rounded as it could be overall for Hollywood. But, man, like, maybe if that had come out in the middle of summer, we would feel a little bit differently about the movies that it just crushed. In its wake. So I don't know, but I wouldn't trade starting the summer out that way for anything.
No, I mean, look, if you look at 1993, I mean, that's off the top of my head, that's not a great movie in terms of, like, the volume, not a ton of great movies, but guess what? It has Jurassic Park. So automatically it's one of my favorite movie summers of all time. So yeah, I think that on the strength of one or two big titles, you can do that. I think another notable thing about the summer is that it's kind of like the revenge of 2008, you know, where you had Iron Man opening it and the Dark Knight kind of, you know, pulling up the rear. And, this was like that on steroids.
Yeah, but
without the good
Knight,
stuff in between.
Did Dark Knight Rises end up making a billion?
No, it certainly didn't make nearly as much as Dark Knight, but...
in terms of the Avengers. Bigger. So, yeah, it did end up making a billion worldwide, Dark Knight Rises did. Which people forget. I'm telling you, like, that movie was an enormous hit, and people overall liked it. But Avengers made $1.5 billion. So it won.
It did. Which, you know, of those two, that's a wonderful matchup there. You know, to pit those two movies together means that you're in good. Yeah, things are turning out well if those are your two options.
Yep.
2013 started off, and we were living in a post-event world, and that's quite apparent with its May opener, which was Iron Man 3, and it made a lot of money, and kicked off a pretty busy summer, I think. What date did Iron Man 3 come out? And give me some context.
Yeah, it came out May 3rd, 2013. It opened on its own. Obviously, nobody wanted anything to do with it. So it cleaned up. It ended up grossing $409 million domestic. It may have gone a billion worldwide. But, yeah, it was $1.2 billion worldwide. So... it was an enormous hit. It was the top grosser of the summer. So it was a behemoth, just like it's a great reflection of just like what Marvel has become, what the Iron Man brand specifically has become, what that first Iron Man on that, as that May opener just a few years prior, 5 years prior, in fact, what that set into motion, like the fact that just 5 years ago, this movie that became sort of this, again, sleeper hit, if you can believe it, managed to inspire audiences and obviously inspire the studio to really hunker down and settle in on Marvel in the cinematic universe, and you go from being what Iron Man was to being what seemed like an easy $1 billion grosser in the span of 5 years, and also spawn all of these other Marvel films that are in this interconnected universe. It's really quite amazing just that process took as little time as it did. So I think Iron Man 3 is a pretty solid reflection of just what the Marvel machine was in its highest possible gear. And that I respect that, but Iron Man 3 is my least favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movie overall, and obviously my least favorite Iron Man movie. It just doesn't work for me. I don't know what it is, and I think Shane Black's obviously a really good filmmaker. He's made some great films, obviously written some great films, and you know, I love Tony Stark. I love the universe, but there was just something about it all that just may have had a little unfair Avengers fatigue and Marvel Cinematic Universe fatigue, where I wish that these movies, this is kind of the point where I wish that these movies would just kind of focus in on the characters themselves and their movie without worrying about the larger context and building the rest of the world, because that had been done. And, you know, hopefully with something like Guardians of the Galaxy, and we obviously had something like Doctor Strange, and there have been movies since Iron Man 3 that have managed to do that and been really fun singular experiences. I just wish Iron Man could get back on track. I fear that, I don't know, and you can tell me because you know this better than I do, but I fear that that's the last Robert Downey Jr. led Iron Man movie, like standalone Iron Man movie that we'll get. Maybe we'll get more, but it'd be a shame because that character still has so much potential, but maybe they feel like they've realized it all.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably commanding a paycheck, and those movies are commanding a budget that's just, you know, they can get more bang for their buck with other properties. Yeah, I don't know. It's honestly, I don't see it really doing much at all to set up the greater Marvel universe. It's all, unless I'm missing something, it's all pretty Iron Man centric.
Yeah, but it references the Avengers over and over and over. The fact that you build this entire story out of what happened in the first Avengers movie, and it's just too much callback to it. And the whole PTSD narrative just didn't work for me. I thought it was forced and weak, and it depended too much on the larger universe for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if something like that happens, you can't ignore. You know, if that, something like that happens to your character, you can't really ignore it. But I also kind of agree that it felt forced and weird. There's a lot of things. It's a much like it's a very similar situation to me as Iron Man 2, but with a weaker villain, or at least with partly a weaker villain. I think the whole Mandarin storyline in Iron Man 3 is brilliant, and gives us one of the best moments in the Marvel universe, and also the action scene where he's rescuing or where his empty Iron Man suit is rescuing a bunch of people coming out of a plane, I think is one of the most amazingly conceived action scenes in the Marvel franchise. But yeah, this is a movie that it's got a lot of moving parts and they don't exactly add up. I recently rewatched and I had fun with it, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff that stands out. And then just as somebody that lives in the South, seeing the way that Shane Black and company think that Tennessee works is real strange, because it's portrayed as like this Canadian lumber town, basically, where people wear plaid and it's always snowing.
And it's like,
they drive by this like Miss Chattanooga beauty pageant, and it's perceived, it's shown as this like stupid, like backwater, like dummy town. And it's like Chattanooga is like a metropolitan area with like a huge, you know, like a river walk, and it's a nice
really
place.
Nice.
Yeah. So you guys don't know what you're talking about. Just do a little bit of research.
I think you called it before the worst possible depiction of Tennessee or the South in movie history.
I mean, it's pretty bad, and it sucks because Shane Black is great, but it's like, dude, stick to making movies about LA, because that's what you know. But there's a Lethal Weapon quality to like a little bit of the film where Tony Stark and Rhodey team up and are just like running around with guns shooting people, And it's like, oh, this is great. I wish this had been the whole movie. Like, this should have been an Iron Man War Machine movie.
Let me stop you there, because you're reminding me of probably my biggest fundamental problem with the movie. It definitely shouldn't be the whole movie. A Lethal Weapon movie should be the whole movie where that kind of stuff happens. But when Iron Man and War Machine are in the movie, they should be wearing the Iron Man and War Machine suits. And that's the whole problem with this movie, is that it's all about his fear of the suit and how the suit has taken over his life and he has to get rid of that. So I can just be Robert Downey Jr. and so you can see Robert Downey's Jr.'s face the whole time instead of being hidden behind a suit. And that to me is a big problem in the Marvel Universe, where it has become, you know, it's understandable because, you know, in this modern Hollywood where a lot of people are skeptical about movie star presence, whether people have movie star fatigue or just kind of indifferent to it in terms of how movie stars can drive the marketing and drive the box office of a movie. Obviously, Disney and Marvel disagree because they go out of their way to feature the faces of the movie stars that are in their movies instead of covering up Robert Downey Jr.'s face or Chris Pratt's face with the Iron Man or Star-Lord masks. We see their faces most of the time, even if they're wearing the suit from the neck down. And you know, for me, just as somebody who's a fan of the characters and comics and the action, like, I want to see Iron Man in action. I love Tony Stark, don't get me wrong, but I love Iron Man just as much, if not more, and I like to see Iron Man wearing that suit and fighting, you know, good, bad guys, whether they're fire people or not. I'd rather see Iron Man. And so I fundamentally disagree with the big statement that this movie, and I think the MCU overall, is making about the suit. So, yeah, that's my lingering issue, and whether or not that speaks to the specific movie itself instead of Marvel on the whole, I don't really care. It's just kind of how it hit me when I saw it, and kind of how it hit me since I watched it. So that's why it ranks so low for me.
Well, fair enough, and I think that's an interesting narrative. If you look at the last 5 years that we're talking about here, is you start with Iron Man kicking off the May, and then it's a movie about a guy who built an awesome suit and loves it and enjoys it. And then 5 years later, you kick off the summer with a movie about a guy that cannot stand that suit and wants to get away from it. And it's kind of like it's you know, the superhero movies themselves are getting superhero movie fatigue. So yeah, I think that's an interesting statement about where the superhero movies were in 2013, which is kind of where we're still at, I think, as you were saying. So what else came out this summer?
Well, the next week, Star Trek Into Darkness made up for it for me. That was May 9th that opened. I love Star Trek Into Darkness. Haters be damned. That movie is so good, and it is just, it's one of the best recent action movies, let alone sci-fi action movies in recent memory. Great summer movie, reinforced that J.J. Abrams, like you've always emphasized, is such a masterful director of action and just a really terrific director on the whole. I was glad he stuck around to do a sequel in that franchise. I you know, in some ways wish he could have stuck around to make a trilogy, but he went on to do, obviously, different things. I won't necessarily say bigger and better things, because I think his Star Trek movies are fantastic. And right up there in ways with The Force Awakens, for sure, that showcased him as such a terrific blockbuster summer action director. So Star Trek Into Darkness came out. I know you're also a fan, if you want to say anything before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not crazy about the script, but in terms of what Abrams brings to the table, it is, I mean, even considering Force Awakens, I think some of the action stuff here and some of the staging is just, it's just masterful. And I think this is definitely where he clicked, where he was like, okay, I am this guy. You're like, I'm Spielberg, McTiernan, you know, he's in that kind of conversation for me in terms of a guy that understands geography and understands action, but also, you know, understands, it has his own visual style that he brings to it. So yeah, I think that regardless of some script issues that I have with it, some weird choices, I think that it's him at his full power as a blockbuster director.
Definitely.
And probably, except for maybe one exception, the best example of that this summer, of just kind of big-scale Hollywood filmmaking.
That same weekend, The Great Gatsby opened. In May, Fast and Furious 6 would open. The Hangover Part 3, which was a big dud. I think After Earth came out later in the month. Then you had The Purge, actually, which was obviously low budget, but became sort of this, you know, big franchise that makes a lot of money regardless of that budget. You had Now You See Me, the Stupid Magician movie. In June, you had The Internship, that Vince Vaughn Owen Wilson comedy. You had This Is the End, the Seth Rogen comedy. Man of Steel came out June 14th, the same weekend as The Bling Ring. You had Despicable Me 2, Monsters University on the same weekend, which is crazy to think about.
Wow.
And also World War Z that same weekend, too. So you had The Heat to close out June, along with White House Down. You had The Lone Ranger, which I know you'll make a case for here in a little bit. You had Grown Ups 2, the Adam Sandler movie. You had friggin' Pacific Rim in the middle of July, which is right where that belongs. You had Red 2, RIPD, The Conjuring, The World's End, all on the same weekend.
Wow.
Then you had The Wolverine. Then you had The Smurfs 2. Then August, like the most August-y summer movie I can think of, Two Guns, came out, that Mark Wahlberg, Denzel Washington movie. You had We're the Millers, a comedy. Elysium came out in August. Underrated, I'll just say. And that's really it. That's like the biggest stuff. So, kind
well,
of
actually,
summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I take back what I said in terms of, like, you know, I was kind of, you know, saying that Abrams had no equal when it came to staging action this summer. But I had totally forgotten. And the exception I was saying was Pacific Rim. But I had totally forgotten that Fast and Furious 6 had come out, which has an excellent, at least two excellent set pieces in it. And then, oh boy, you mentioned another one. I already forgot it, which is
Elysium.
Elysium was strong, but there was something else. Oh, The Lone Ranger. Yeah, The Lone Ranger, the climax of that movie is incredible action staging and action filmmaking. And yeah, an underrated movie for sure. So yeah, this is a fun summer, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I know you also like The Wolverine, too. And
sure, I like The Wolverine. I like Monsters University.
Yeah, Monsters University is great. That's one of my biggest regrets of skipping that at the theater. And
me
when
too.
I saw that on DVD, I was just like, "Wow, this is oh wait, it's a Pixar movie. That's right, you dummy. Don't skip it. Don't skip them again. You know, like don't be stupid." So who knows what I did? I probably just thought, "Oh, it's a prequel. Pixar shouldn't be doing prequels." You know, without like remembering, all right, Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 and other. You know, this like it's okay. It's Pixar. Shut up. But yeah, like the
show
movie
up.
Of the summer. Yeah, the movie of the summer for me was Pacific Rim in retrospect. Like certainly like when I saw, I don't know that I had low expectations going into it. I didn't really know what to think of it. And I liked Guillermo del Toro, but I didn't love him. But then this concept of the whole like robots versus monsters thing was just like too good not to be kind of excited about, if not a lot excited about. And when I saw it, I was like, this kicks ass. Like, this is the best thing ever. I think the movie of the summer, though, that like what really defined it was Man of Steel, just in terms of anticipation and what I was most excited about based on the trailers and all of the hype going into it. And while, look, I wasn't as disappointed as most people at this point who seem to just sort of collectively hate this movie. For one reason or another, I think those reasons are mostly unfair, and I think they're a little misguided, and I think that, you know, it's more about misplaced hatred for DC philosophically. I think Man of Steel is really fun still. Whenever it comes on cable, I like to watch it. It's still sitting on my DVR whenever I want to go back and take a look. It's not often, but, you know, if I do, it's right there, and you know, look, I didn't like Batman versus Superman as much, and certainly by comparison, Man of Steel looks a lot better. But again, if something defines the summer for me, it's not Iron Man 3. Pacific Rim is my favorite movie of the summer, and I love Star Trek Into Darkness, but I'll remember summer 2003 because of Man of Steel for, again, one reason or another.
Absolutely. Going into that movie and going into the summer, that was it, you know, for me as a huge Superman fan. I was like, wow, we're getting Superman back, and a little bit sooner than I expected. So, you know, I was in, like, you know, real in deep with that movie in terms of getting hype for it. I listened to the soundtrack before it came out. Obviously that trailer was on loop before, you know, in the months before for me. It's a great trailer. Still one of the all-time great movie trailers, I think. The not the first teaser one that uses the Lord of the Rings song, but the one that actually uses the Hans Zimmer theme from the movie that I know you love as well. So yeah, I was on board. And it's one of those examples where the hype for the movie, you know, carried through to my reaction walking out of the movie, because I loved it. I was like, this is the best Superman movie ever. And I think I was still responding to that trailer. Obviously, we've talked about this in depth before on a Batman Superman show. But yeah, it's you know, if I think a great metric for how much I enjoyed a summer movie is yeah, that DVR thing, or what's, you know, it's sitting on my shelf. I've got a few hours to kill, or it's on DVR or whatever. What am I going to pick? And I can probably list 5 movies on my hand that summer that I would pick, that I have picked before I would pick Man of Steel to rewatch it, because you described it as a fun movie. It's not a fun movie. It's a drab, ugly, mean, gross movie. It's because, and it's not because I hate DC. I love DC. DC has made the best superhero movie trilogy of all time. So it's because Zack Snyder's not a good feature film director, and that's the problem, and that's what became obvious to me. And he's not just that, but he's a man that doesn't like Superman, and he doesn't care about the character. He doesn't want to make the movie. He didn't want to make the movie. He wanted to make a Batman movie. That's clear. Yeah, that's where we stand. So, but no, in terms of the summer, it's a testament to how great everybody else was, because this was a one summer movie for me. I was only excited about one movie. That movie disappointed me after a day of reflection. But I still look back, and there's, you know, Star Trek and Fast and Furious and Monsters University. Pacific Rim is, I agree, the movie of the summer, in terms of delivering everything that I want. Like, in a strange way, Pacific Rim feels like a movie that could have come out in 1996, you know? And I feel like that's a really great way to describe a successful summer movie. Is like, could this have come out in June 1996, and would it have held my interest? Yes? Okay, well, then you did something right.
Yeah, am I comfortable putting it in the same box as Independence Day and The Rock and
yes,
Eraser?
Exactly.
And yeah, Pacific Rim, that's definitely where it belongs. And it feels very old school, and maybe that's why, like, I feel like I'm 12 when I'm watching it, and like, I feel like
yes,
this is the kind of movie that made me like movies and made me like spending the bulk of my summer in a movie theater growing up. So, it has those coming-of-age tendencies just in terms of my perspective and how I absorb them and how it makes me feel. So, yeah, Pacific Rim, it's very close to home for a lot of different reasons. And it just, beyond that, I think it's just really good. I think it's just, like, got such an amazing structure. The effects are fantastic. I love the performances. And for me, it's Guillermo del Toro's best movie to date. I personally think so.
I'm there with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the designs of the creatures, the designs of the robots, it's just like, it's got everything. It really does. And God knows whenever that's on cable, I feel compelled to like send a group text to our like group thread and be like, Pacific Rim is on TNT right now.
Alert.
You know? So
yeah.
Pacific Rim rules.
Yeah. And you said I would make a case for the Lone Ranger, and I will. I mean, it's just a really, yeah, I mean, there's some silly Johnny Depp stuff, and there's a bizarre, this tonally questionable juxtaposition between, like, the killing of Native Americans with, like, a summer action movie. But I feel like that's what you get in a Gore Verbinski movie. There is a preoccupation with death and morbidity that Verbinski has that he brings to most of his movies, and it's fully on display here. I mean, this is a movie about how to deal with dying and how to deal with kind of, you know, a decaying culture. And Yes, that's the kind of stuff that I wouldn't want in my Superman movie, and maybe that's not the best place to put it in a Lone Ranger movie, which arguably should have a similar tone. But guess what? He's a competent director who wanted to be there. I mean, he stuck around on this project after it had a lot of issues, and I think for good reason, because there's a lot of fun to be had, and it's actually a really, really strong superhero origin movie, which is one of the laziest genres that we have nowadays. But Armie Hammer brings it, Brubinsky brings it, Hans Zimmer is on fire, and it's a really, really fun, well put together movie. And I remember seeing it just as an obligation that summer, because I got to see it, and really loved it. Really, it was just kind of, I was like turning it over in my head and like replaying a lot of the staging and everything in my head afterwards, and it holds up to on rewatch in my experience. So yeah, again, good summer.
Yeah.
So the next year, Marvel stepped aside. They had just released Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which, you know, probably could have kicked off the summer and made a lot of money, but whatever reason they didn't. That was, I think, an April release. And but the official summer starter in May was a throwback to 1998, which, you know, arguably what maybe should have been the opener that year was a Godzilla movie, this time directed by Gareth Edwards. And I believe, I'm not even going to try. What date was Godzilla?
May 8th, 2014.
Yeah. For some reason, I remember that font. I remember I was gonna guess May 8th, but then I figured I was wrong. But no, because the font and the posters and the marketing of that movie were so good, I feel like that date is still burned into my head, which I guess is good for Warner Brothers. So for the last few years before this, my company, in a self-deprecating admission of scheduling things poorly, we've been doing our Christmas parties in May. Because it's like we're so busy during Christmas that we just kind of keep having to kick everything down the road. So in years past, it had been like in April, so we saw like Source Code 1 year and Limitless. Limitless 1 year instead of Source Code, which was I had an argument there. I think we saw Prometheus eventually the next year. I think the year before that, or the year before this one, was Star Trek, where we all went as an office to see Star Trek. And then this year, we all went as an office to see Godzilla. And one of my coworkers walked out because she just did not like it. And I didn't like it. It was like a reverse Man of Steel thing. I didn't like it the first time I saw it. And then upon revisiting it and playing the movie over in my head, I ended up really liking it a lot for counterintuitive reasons. It's a strange summer opener for sure. It's a dark movie about, it's about like societal decay in a way and how we deal with that. And what do we do when the major things of the planet are done with us, and when we die, we die against an unblinking, uncaring world, you know, where these giant monsters are just fighting over top us and don't give a crap about what happens to us. It's the total opposite of Pacific Rim, but in a way it's a nice, pairing with it. And I think one thing that helped me process it was going back and watching the original 1954 Godzilla, which was also, you know, made in the wake of the dropping of the atomic bombs and, just this reaction to our, existential crisis. And so, yeah, I think your existential crisis action summer blockbuster action creature feature probably shouldn't be the happy, optimistic May opener. So this was an odd choice for sure.
Yeah, I could just feel the popcorn butter oozing off of your description of what the movie is about just now. So,
yep.
Yeah, maybe not the best choice. Maybe you should have waited a few weeks. X-Men Days of Futures Past came out shortly after this. This movie actually opened with Million Dollar Arm, that John Hamm baseball movie. So this, you know, this was basically on its own. It did really well, I would say. It made $200 million domestically. That was good enough for 13th all year long in 2014. Guardians of the Galaxy came out in August, I think, and that ended up being the top grosser of the summer, overall.
That's so rare. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. And it was the third highest grosser of the entire year. It was actually ahead of Captain America, Winter Soldier, by a pretty considerable margin. So, yeah, we can get to that, but that's Guardians of the Galaxy just really making a statement, and Marvel maybe inadvertently making a statement with this basically unknown brand of superheroes. And Lord, they're not unknown anymore, are they, as we're about to find out. But yeah, you know, Godzilla is not my favorite, and I was really pumped for it. It was arguably my most anticipated of the summer, maybe. Once we go through this list, that'll change. But yeah, you know, I'm glad YouTube exists, and God bless people out there who upload Blu-ray quality videos and scenes from movies. They're amazing people who have a lot of time on their hands and do us a lot of favors, because now I can just go to YouTube and I can search when Godzilla actually shows up in Godzilla 2014, and I can watch it and I can actually see Godzilla, you know, and even if it's in like 3 to 4 minute increments towards the end of the movie, it's there for me now. So, yeah, that's my main takeaway. But look, Godzilla had a lot of potential, and it had an amazing cast. I'm not sure that it realized all of the potential of the cast. I think a few people were wasted. Like, I'm still wondering, like, what's Sally Hawkins doing in that movie? What's, you know,
yeah,
Ken Watanabe was good, I guess.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Yeah, again, Bryan Cranston's probably the highlight for sure, but then you've got, like, Elizabeth Olsen just kind of sitting there, you know, as the wife on the phone. You know, a lot of wives on the phone. That you know, that seems to be a popular role, especially like last year you had Laura Linney and Sully, and I'm trying to remember there was another one, but you know, you got these amazing actresses, give them something to do outside of, you know, hold a phone cord with their opposite hand, with their offhand, you know, like anyway, Godzilla pioneered that for sure. But no, I mean, look, it had an amazing cast. It had a really cool look and a really great sense of dread, like you mentioned already, and so I, you know, it had a lot of really terrific like moving parts, and it just didn't all work for me. It didn't all coalesce, because I was hoping that it would be that big May summer starter with amazing set pieces, and I guess I was kind of hoping, like, especially coming off of 2013 with Pacific Rim, I was probably hoping for Pacific Rim again, so something sort of like it, a counterpiece to that. In a way, in many ways, it is a counter to Pacific Rim.
It's a contrast.
Exactly, like you just said. But I don't know. I think after 1998, and after there had been so much time between, you know, what many people consider an actual good Godzilla movie, we were getting this. You know, you feel like there's that feeling going into it of, okay, we're going to get Godzilla right this time. And I know that there are enormous fans of this movie who would say they do get it right, and they get so much about Godzilla right, but I think in those Godzilla movies that got it right, they showed Godzilla, so I think that's what this was missing, and that's my problem with Godzilla, not the Hulk.
That's a different argument, not necessarily. You know, I mean, all of those movies were basically, you know, sci-fi movies for three quarters of the way, and then Godzilla showed up, and then even then you didn't necessarily see a ton of them. But regardless, I agree with you, and I think that I think Days of Future Past 100% should have been the May opener this year. You know, I mean, in the tradition of X2 and X-Men Origins Wolverine, you know, I think they had a reason to do that, and I feel like that is a very, I mean, it goes some dark places, but that's a really fun, you know, propulsive movie with one of the best, if not the best, set piece of the year, if not the summer itself, with the Quicksilver rescue sequence. You know, it's just a really fun, well put together superhero movie that ends on a really great note. So it's like, why didn't we just swap places here?
Yeah, probably should have. I mean, even How to Train Your Dragon 2, which would come out.
Yes.
I think in between those two movies, How to Train Your Dragon 2 blew me away, man. Like, I wasn't expecting
it
to be as good as it was.
Best movie of the year. Best movie.
That was your number one?
That's my number one, yeah.
I mean,
it's great.
I
put it in the same conversation when you're talking about like swashbuckling adventure movies. I put it right there with like the Seahawk or Fellowship of the Ring, you know, or something like that. I just feel like in terms of like this like mission adventure movie where everything kind of falls on our hero and he has to kind of conquer all of the things that are stacked up against him. This is it, you know, this does all those things and it does it with a moral complexity that you don't see in kids movies ever, you know. I mean, his spoilers for How to Train Your Dragon 2, but you know, there's a part where his best friend dragon kills his dad and he has to cope with that and deal with it and understand, you know, what forgiveness looks like. And I don't know, it's just it's a great, great movie. And watching in the theater, watching these giant dragon, I mean, this was the movie I think that you probably wanted Godzilla to be, because you had these giant monsters fighting each other and then other smaller monsters flying around. And it's, in terms of big screen spectacle, it's right there. I mean, yeah, it's a Jay Baruchel movie, but
yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, it does all of that in spite of Jay Baruchel being the lead voice actor, which, I mean, of all things, like, if he was live action and he was the lead actor, that would be one thing, but voice acting specifically, how that managed to survive that casting is pretty amazing. But that same weekend, you had The Fault in Our Stars, which was another YA adaptation that did really well. The horror movie It Follows sort of blew up shortly after that. But in terms of blockbusters, let's move through May, because we're running out of movies here, because it really started strong with those. One of the best movies of the summer came along, Edge of Tomorrow. Really good. Big surprise. Oh, and the week before that, the Adam Sandler movie was Blended. The same weekend as Edge of Tomorrow was Maleficent. And a few days after that, Seth MacFarlane's A Million Ways to Die in the West came out. Then you had 22 Jump Street, Jersey Boys, Transformers Age of Execution, which admittedly has some fun action, but maybe the stupidest subtitle ever. Then,
wait, did you say Age of Extinction or Age of Execution?
Oh, I said Execution, okay, and that's why I thought it was stupid, but you're right, it's Extinction.
Well, that would refer to the way that Optimus Prime kills the Leonard Nimoy robot at the end of Dark of the Moon. Just that bullet to back of head. Anyway.
Yeah, apologies. This one had T.J. Miller, though, so, you know, whatever. The next week, I think probably the best movie of the summer came out for me, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That was on my top 10 list of the year. Oh, my God, that movie's so awesome. Watch it if you've ever seen it.
It's great.
Then Tammy came out. That was the Melissa McCarthy movie. I have a feeling, like, instead of saying the Adam Sandler movie was, in like 10 years we'll be saying the Melissa McCarthy movie was. Tammy was the Melissa McCarthy movie of 2014. Then you had Planes, Fire, and Rescue, which, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll see that in a couple of years because I've got a daughter. Then you had Sex Tape, a comedy, The Purge, Anarchy. You had Guardians of the Galaxy actually opening in July. I was wrong. I thought that was an August movie. But that was actually mid to late July. So that came out.
No, that's probably some weird Marvel Australia UK thing. I can almost promise you that the U.S. release was in...
Okay, so U.S. release date for that was August 1st.
Yeah.
Okay, so Wikipedia has this weird, like, they list the foreign release date.
The world
for the Marvel
movies. Yeah.
So, then you've got Hercules, The Rock movie, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oof.
And then you get into August, and you've got The Expendables 3, which, I think I remember thinking that was the best Expendables for some reason.
No, the second one's the best one, but the third one is the best thing about it is Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, okay, so there's that. And then Sin City came out, the Sin City sequel.
Wait, wasn't 302 in here somewhere, or was that earlier in the year? Maybe that was the March release.
I don't see 302, yeah, that might have been.
Okay.
God, so August was The Expendables 3, and that's it.
And Guardians,
wow.
Technically.
Yeah,
yeah,
Guardians. That was August 1st, you know?
Yeah, that's in August for sure.
Woof.
Yeah, what iffy summer. An iffy summer. I mean, there's obviously Guardians, X-Men, Edge of Tomorrow, Godzilla,
you know,
Dawn.
And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So there's some really big high water marks. But yeah, I remember, you know, kind of folding up the newspaper and putting it away several times. And I looked at the listing that summer. That never happened because I don't have a newspaper. But
well,
you know,
and also,
you know what I'm saying.
Captain America came out in April. So, you know, maybe
sure.
It's like in a way that was like quasi May. That did sort of like unofficially start the start the summer, I guess, and maybe that meant okay, we're done with August. But if Guardians opened in August, I guess we have to count that.
Well, it's definitely, you know, we're getting a Ape sequel, a Transformers sequel, and a Guardian sequel this summer. So it was definitely 3 years ago. You know, the pattern is there. Yeah, so, I mean, overall, it's a decent summer, and I feel like now these days, have we had a bad summer, really, since, like, 2009 or 2010, whenever the last argument, or 2011, maybe? It seems like the studios are kind of, like, I think Marvel movies are typically good enough, and then the other studios are good enough at figuring out who to put in charge of these things so that they're not terrible. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, probably not. Maybe they're a little too focus grouped, you know. Maybe they're a little too many fingerprints on some of these blockbusters at times. Yeah, we've had a conversation. I had a conversation with our friend Corey Kraft about this. I think during summer 2014, specifically, where it just felt like there were millions of movies like every weekend, like from one weekend to the next. It just felt like there were 2 to 3 movies like you wanted to see that you had to see. And it was all just like stuffed into the summer and like from one week to the next. And I just remember thinking like, we're being like weirdly, like the movie calendar feels like overly saturated. And that's like a weird problem to have, you know, like you want to have as many great movies as you can, but it's like, it gave the movies no room to breathe, you know, especially at the box office. It gave us no room to breathe. As moviegoers, in terms of like seeing this one movie, letting that sort of be the movie of the moment for a while. Instead, we're just moving on to the next thing like immediately. And I remember that being a problem. I guess that's a good problem to have, but in some ways, it's a little much.
I mean, kind of. I mean, do you want pizza every night of the week? I mean, pizza's
right.
Great. Pizza's never good, but eventually you're going to die, you know? I think this is the 2007 problem. I think this all started in 2007, where it's like every weekend has these huge movies, and some of them are competing with each other on the same weekend, and that's crazy. And there's very few risks being taken here either. I mean, obviously Guardians was a huge risk, but for Marvel, it's a calculated risk. So it's rare that you're getting risky movies, you know. So it's like, well, these are great, but are they really like special? And that's the sad thing, you know, is when you have to start parsing things out that way. It's like, oh, we're getting so much good stuff that is objectively good, however, with so much of it that it doesn't feel special anymore, and now we're just kind of like, you know, talking about the next thing, and it's like we're not actually. And then you have the thing where we have so much good stuff, and now I feel like because of Twitter and because we all have to have hot takes, you get people that just react to good stuff with negative reactions because that's more interesting. You know, I feel like that's a trend. That's probably a separate conversation, but I feel like that's a trend too, where it's like, well, that was good, but like I'm seeing it with the stupid tweets about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where people are saying it was great, but, and there's like this one or two issues, which is, first of all, stop talking about it. This movie hasn't come out yet. But second of all, it's like, well, just leave it. If you liked it, leave it there. Like, that's all we need from you people. But anyway, so that's a side rant. But we're definitely getting into the, you know, the machine is working extremely efficiently these days. And that rolls right into 2015. And I already forgot the opener. Just kick off 2015 and just go through the whole schedule, maybe, because I'm drawing a blank except for Mad Max here.
Avengers Age of Ultron.
There you go. Okay.
May 1st, 2015, it opened on its own. And you're right, the next week, Mad Max Fury Road opened. So it's like again, it gets right into it where it's like you're kicking it off with this enormous movie, what could be the biggest movie of the year, and then the very next week you've got this movie that people are already calling like the greatest action movie ever made, wrongly, in my opinion, but we'll get to that. Avengers Age of Ultron is a total blast. It's just a really super fun Joss Whedon movie. I'm super sad Joss Whedon has left Marvel in the fashion that he has. And, you know, the craziest thing about Avengers Age of Ultron, so everybody knew it was going to be huge. We knew it was going to make $1 billion, which it did. It was the third highest grossing movie of 2015, if you can believe that. And not even the biggest grosser of the summer. So that lets you know, like, what kind of year 2015 was, just in terms of, like, money at the box office and where kind of people's heads were at, and like, not necessarily where people's heads were at, but like, it sort of told Hollywood that people weren't done with certain franchises and people were interested in other things outside of Marvel and outside of the Avengers, and that they were pre-existing properties, but they were definitely new takes on those pre-existing franchises and characters. And I think that just like, if dollar signs obviously weren't already in the eyes of Hollywood, it happened tenfold, and we would get a big new franchise on top of an already pretty enormous franchise in Jurassic World, which would come out later in the summer, and we'll get to it. But Avengers Age of Ultron, for you, how does it hold up?
It's great. It's actually underrated. I loved it when I saw it in the theater, for the way that it took all the themes and all the things going on in the other Marvel movies and kind of tied them all together. But in terms of just comic book movies, like, this is the most comic book movie ever, I feel like, in some ways. You know, there's the scene where Vision is born, and like, the logic that that scene uses is total comic book logic, driven by character, driven by all these different plot threads. And it totally, totally works. Whedon just totally understands how to transpose that comic book fantasy world logic to a screen. So, yeah, I rewatched again recently. Yes, I feel like you need one or two extra scenes to figure out exactly what the hell Thor is doing, which leads to that Vision scene. But other than that, I think that, gosh, this is one of the best Marvel movies. It's one of the best villains. A few of the action scenes are a little kind of gray and shaky, but then at the same time you have like the incredible action scene in Seoul, and then again at the end, you know, you have that one magnificent shot of kind of rotating around all the characters as they're doing crazy, crazy stuff. And it's comic book movie making at its finest. It's, again, I think it's one of those movies that it just clicks all the boxes, and yet we have to, even though it's so good, there's so much other good stuff that we have to figure out some arbitrary reasons why it's not as good as some other good stuff.
Blame Twitter, man. Blame the internet. Yeah. You know? Like, yeah. And I know that's like, it's a broad accusation, but it's just, it's just ingrained in us that we have to speak that language. Like, we have to speak in tweets all the time. We feel so compelled, like, especially like watching a movie, watching any live event, we have to comment on every single beat, you know, like, we have to have some smart ass shit to say about every little thing, because it's going to get favorited. It might get retweeted. You know, you never know which thing is going to, you never know what the new meme is going to be. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm just like so freaking sick of it, man, because stuff like that has just ruined, like, again, live events for me. It's also ruined movies in a lot of ways, because again, we talk about like the day something comes out. It's like everything wrong with the Avengers in 20 minutes or less, you know, where you have these, I know that you have a pretty serious disdain for these like videos, like, you know, screen junkie hole, .net, you know, like crap like that, where it's just like they immediately deconstruct every little thing about something that you just should consume like it's junk food. You know what I mean? Like, you should just shove into your mouth and just try to enjoy until, you know, until further notice. You know what I mean? And that's what bugs me about, like, and I don't know, you know, you should process it, and you should come.
No, you should process it with depth. That's the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, you should, exactly,
shallow.
You're right. Like, you should,
it's shallow.
You should come to terms with it and how you feel, and you should examine the context of it, and if you feel a different way about it after the fact, that's fine, but like you said, back it up with something substantial, you know, or substantive. Like, give us, let's have a conversation about it, especially
yeah.
if you like
yeah.
Avengers, you know, and Captain America Civil War, obviously, is similar, where it's like, and a lot of these Marvel movies are this way. The Dark Knight, obviously, is like this, where it's like, these movies actually have something to say. They actually have, you know, tangible characters with depth. So let's treat these movies and the filmmakers and the performances and everything about them, let's treat them with as much respect as the people behind these movies have
yep.
treated us with respect in terms of
yep.
giving us blockbuster with actual fodder for our brains, you know, on top of all of the popcorn fun that Avengers Age of Ultron and movies like it obviously have. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that it's weirdly underrated. And I think we're going to be saying that about a lot of great movies, you know, that are maybe liked immediately, but are, again, deconstructed in this, like you said, this very shallow way that makes us sort of like smack ourselves in the head and say, wait a second, like, those were great, and what are we doing, and what are people saying? Like, people are hating on it just to hate on it, and it's a shame. So I'm happy to sit here and say I loved Avengers Age of Ultron when I saw it, and I'll watch it forever. It's because it's freaking awesome.
Yep. All right, so we had Mad Max. Tomorrowland was in there, right? Wasn't it the week after Mad Max, maybe?
Same week as Mad Max, maybe. Again, like, I'm working with this kind of like wonky schedule. So yeah, the Disneyland premiere was May 9th, for God's sakes, and then May 22nd is when it actually came out. So it was a couple of weeks after Mad
yeah.
Max Fury Road came out. And I know we got opinions on Tomorrowland for sure.
Oh,
then,
you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I we don't have to go into it. It's Tomorrowland. It's
we've
fine.
Gone into
it's,
it. Go back and listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we have. Yep.
Spy came out. That was the Melissa McCarthy movie of 2015, which people really liked, it seems. You had Inside Out, one of the greatest Pixar movies ever made. Couldn't believe
yep.
we got that in 2015 from them. You had Poltergeist. You had, God, this was another summer where it's like, when the Avengers movie comes out, everybody else just kind of like gets out of the way. But you had the Cameron Crowe comedy, Aloha, Entourage. You had San Andreas. And then at the end of the month, Jurassic World comes and just like, you know, just starts beating down the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was amazing. It like went nuclear. And I thought that movie was going to do well. I did not think that Jurassic World was going to just like obliterate. Not only obliterate the Avengers, but just, like, obliterate the summer. And after that, you had the third Insidious movie. You had Minions, Southpaw, coming up in June, Terminator, Genisys. You had Ted 2, Magic Mike XXL, three straight. No, wait, like, everything I've said has been a sequel, which is insane. Ant-Man, after that. Then we get into July, and we've got stuff like, geez, what happened in July? Because they include all of these indie movies, too, and there's just a million of them. So is there nothing, like, big at the beginning of July? What am I missing here? Mission Impossible Rogue Nation
yeah.
came out in July. Pixels was the Adam Sandler movie. Then we get into August, and you've got Fantastic Four, Total Flop, Man from U.N.C.L.E., I guess not a total flop because there's a sequel coming out, Straight Outta Compton. And after Straight Outta Compton, that's pretty much where we stop.
That's a fairly strong August. I mean, really, if you just count Straight Outta Compton, which made a lot of money and I've seen, but I've heard is good, and Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is really good. But yeah, Fantastic Four, too, so that's god-awful. So, really good summer. In my opinion, I mean, you have Avengers, Mad Max,
Mission Impossible. Like, those three movies are great. You know, and especially, I mean, in terms of just action filmmaking, the fact that we got Fury Road and Rogue Nation in the same summer is just mind-blowing in a way, and it's a big deal. Wait, when did Furious 7 come out? Did you say that?
I did not say Furious 7.
Was that the early July one?
Let's see. Furious 7 came out in April.
Wow, weird. Okay,
April
never mind.
3rd.
That totally should have been a summer release. But no, it just in terms of just all-time action movies, I mean, not the best of all time, but, you know, in the top maybe 50 or so, Rogue Nation and Fury Road probably belong in that conversation, and that's just a few months apart. Yeah, that's pretty good. And then I like Tomorrowland a lot. It's entertaining. Jurassic World has its problems, but I think as a summer movie, it kind of works just fine. And then, of course, you have the best movie of the year, in my opinion, which is Inside Out. So, you know, you can cool your face with the hydration of your tears in a hot summer month by watching Inside Out and losing your shit. So that's a pretty good year for me. What about you?
Yeah, it's a good year overall, I guess, because of, you know, the big, big hits. But then you get into, again, like stretches where you get stuff like Terminator Genesis, Ted 2, and Magic Mike XXL. I should leave out Magic Mike XXL. I only said it just because it was a sequel and I was naming sequels, but I haven't seen that, and I hear it's really good, so I'm going to watch it soon.
Sure.
Ant-Man came out after that.
Ant-Man should be in the conversation. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and maybe,
sure.
Maybe, I mean, again, we talk about kind of the heavy, the lightness of a May opener. It probably wasn't ready by then, and it probably would have been a huge risk. But I think Ant-Man probably should have been the May opener this year, because Age of Ultron does have a conversation in it where Ultron and Vision talk to each other, and Ultron says, "Hey, all humans are going to die soon," and Vision says, "Yeah." So it's another one of those kind of very existential, dark summer blockbusters. And Ant-Man,
yeah,
on the other
Hulk
hand,
and the Hulk and Iron Man fight in the middle of South Africa too. You know,
and they hurt a bunch of people. You know, that's still played for. There's a certain amount of responsibility, you know, that's playing with there. You know, because they had to set up civil war. They had to set up civil
war.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't
want
to get into that whole thing because
I know you don't. I know you
don't.
But okay, well. But my argument is that Ant-Man is the, you know, fun, poppy, little effusive superhero movie.
Mission
that
Impossible
Iron Man
could have
was.
Been there.
Sure, absolutely. Good Lord. I don't think I was ready for it, you know. I think I need to ease into an experience, not just, like, shock my system that way. But, yeah, I mean, either one of those. So, yeah, really good summer. And, again, I need to throw Ant-Man into that conversation because I think it's a little movie, but it's a really special movie that I think holds up on rewatches and kind of gets better just by the charm of its cast and the slick hand of its director. And obviously there's all sorts of rumors and stuff around the direction of that film, but I think what we got was really good, and I think it was a Peyton Reed movie. I want to you know, hold the candle for Ant-Man. But yeah, good summer. 2016, the big one. Marvel came back, and again, playing off of themes set up in Age of Ultron and other movies, we have Civil War, which was huge, and which was, you know, the most recent example for me of, like, I got to make this a, like, midnight movie priority, which was the first time I had done that in a while, and I think I paid for it because I kind of didn't like the movie coming out of it because I was probably really grumpy and sleepy, and Matt and I have I don't think I watched it at midnight, but I think Matt and I have a podcast recorded around midnight about it where he has to defend the movie against my grumpiness.
Yeah, I really like Civil War right when I saw it. I thought, wow, this is up there with Avengers, both Avengers movies. Like, it's obviously a quasi-Avengers movie. Like, this
this is great, and it's just got all the junk food we need, and it really hammers home, maybe more than any of the Marvel movies to date, the sort of philosophical fodder that really drives a lot of conversation in terms of not only, you know, what the movie's trying to say, but also how much depth these comic book movies have, and how much more it has than we expected them to, and like how much maybe we take them for granted, and how they're more than just comic book movies. And so walking out of the theater, I thought, like, wow, that's great. But then, like, in retrospect, I went back and watched it on Netflix. I was just like, I want to have this on in the background. I can't believe Civil War is just available on Netflix, so I'm going to take advantage of it. And as it was on, and I was just kind of watching it, it just didn't really do much for me. Like, on repeat, it just, something about it, something was missing from it. And I was just kind of, I don't know if bored's the right word, but I was just a little indifferent. It didn't really excite me in the same way that it did in the theater. Not that anything really can with a movie like that when you're watching it at home as opposed to in the big theater. But yeah, I don't know. Like something about Captain America Civil War is just, I don't really feel the need to go back and watch it right now. The same way I would Iron Man, the same way I would even Age of Ultron or a few of the others. So maybe that'll change pretty soon. And maybe it's just sort of like, I don't know. I really, like, love the Captain America character. Like, on paper, and even Chris Evans is great, and I love how, like, strict and how principled the character is and how consistently principled he is. That's just really solid writing and character building. But it's just something about the Captain America-led movies, for whatever reason, I guess the last two especially, where I'm just not as on board with this character being the face of Marvel as Marvel seems to be. Like, I think that they, you know, and I know that's true to Marvel itself, and they've got to be true to the character, but I think you got to sort of like go with how the tide is going. And I, you know, not to play into the hands of this movie, but I tend to side with Iron Man. You know, and I kind of wish that Iron Man would sort of get the treatment that the Captain America movies have, that have turned in again to these like quasi Avengers movies. And I know that would cause them to pivot in a large way, but I think that you've got, just in terms of the way people have responded to the movies so far and have responded to the characters, Iron Man is clearly the most popular. And I think that you've got to sort of lead your movies that way. And that's just me being a very specific type of fan, but I just kind of wish that that Iron Man had sort of been the, had sort of gotten what Captain America got in terms of the movies that character got to lead. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in Civil War is strong enough that you could kind of, I mean, that's very much his movie as much as it is Captain America's. So, I don't know. I feel like they're on pretty equal footing right now, and Marvel has done a good job doing that. But at the same time, Captain America's better. And, he's better. So we should have more of him. He's better.
Yeah, and so that movie made what? We're in 2016 now. So yeah, I was looking at the 2016 or 14 thing. So that movie was third overall in 2016 as a whole. That made $408 million, and it was actually second that summer. Finding Dory was the number one movie of the summer, $486 million. Number one movie of the year domestically was Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which outgrossed Captain America Civil War by $130 million, nearly. So that's pretty crazy.
A lot of CGI faces at the top three there.
That's definitely true. The top, yeah, exactly. That's super depressing. Yeah, and those movies just beat out The Secret Life of Pets, to remind you, if you can believe that. But, yeah, you know, if we want to run through the summer here for just a minute, the Angry Birds movie came out, I think, the same weekend, maybe, as Captain America. I'm sorry, yeah, Captain America. X-Men Apocalypse came out not long after that. Alice Through the Looking Glass. Not a great start there. I only recently caught up with X-Men Apocalypse, and I thought it was not bad, which is kind of like
fine.
How I feel about a lot of X-Men movies lately. It's fine. It's good. It's okay. Money Monster came out. The Nice Guys. I know you're a huge fan of that. Neighbors 2.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, Neighbors 2, the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Pop Star would come out. Now You See Me 2, The Conjuring 2, Central Intelligence, Warcraft, God bless it, Finding Dory, The Free State of Jones, Independence Day Resurgence, The Shallows, that closes June out. And then we get into July, we get Legend of Tarzan, the BFG, the third Purge movie. Then we get into The Secret Life of Pets, which was this absolute stunner at the box office that year. I still have yet to see it. I probably will soon. I'm just going to prepare myself. We had Ghostbusters. We had Hillary's America. I'm just kidding. Ice Age, Collision Course.
Lock her up.
We had Star Trek Beyond. We had Jason Bourne, Bad Moms. Then we get into August, and then comes Suicide Squad. And then Pete's Dragon, Sausage Party, Kubo and the Two Strings, War Dogs, Ben-Hur. This is actually a slightly busier August than usual. And then after Ben-Hur, it kind of starts to fizzle out. So
Ben-Hur has to be the most August release ever. Oh, man. Yeah, bad summer. I mean, I think we can look back, and I think in relative to what we've been getting and what we're used to, I think it's a bad summer. I think the great stuff, the Civil War and Finding Dory is really great, but I think both of those are missing something. Maybe just the fact that they're sequels. There's something there that doesn't hit for me, and then all the other stuff that really worked for me made zero money. So Pop Star made no money whatsoever. Nice Guys made very little money. BFG was a big disappointment. Star Trek was a big disappointment. So those are movies that I really liked, but nobody else liked them. Nobody showed up for them. So that makes it, a weak year for me. Is that, you had the stuff that made a big splash culturally was not as strong as it could have been, and then the stuff that was good made no splash culturally. I feel like that's a representative of kind of a bad summer, which, to be honest, is what people were saying last summer. And I was the guy that was like, everything's great. Stop.
Well, and this is the summer we're coming off of, so not to be a downer about it being a bad summer, but I mean, it was just another one that was obviously full of sequels and full of movies that were trying to capitalize on pre-existing franchises and properties, even stuff like Warcraft and Independence Day just seemed like 10 years too late. Tarzan was another movie we didn't really need. The BFG was definitely interesting, but maybe that wasn't the right time. Maybe that should have been made in the 90s, back when I'm sure a lot of people were already trying to make it. So, yeah, it's really strange. Ghostbusters was another thing where it's just like, okay, if you need to. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, Jason Bourne, again, like a sequel that people were clamoring for back when the Bourne Legacy came out. But they made the Bourne Legacy instead, and people kind of forgot about the Bourne franchise. And were just kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're done with that. And then it came, and people were like, yeah, we were kind of done with that. So,
Independence Day is 100% that story,
right?
Which
so,
I think it's crazy because Jurassic World wasn't like that's like my biggest question mark over the last few years of summer movies is like, why was Jurassic World such a huge hit, and then these other things that, because I mean, in 1996, Independence Day was almost as big as Jurassic Park. I mean, it was a huge deal, and I figured that, oh wow, you give that 20 years and people are ready to be nostalgic for that, and nope, didn't happen.
Different factors, I think. Like, you have to think about who's directing this. Does Roland Emmerich still have it? We found out that
did he ever?
And maybe, you loved Independence Day, didn't you? Like, I loved Independence Day. So, he had what he had, and it worked at the time. So maybe that same formula and the way he does things just doesn't apply in 2016, you know. And it also didn't have a lot of star power like it did in 1996. You know, the only guy who didn't come back was Will Smith, the biggest star. You know, with all due respect to Jeff Goldblum, you know, its biggest modern star was Liam Hemsworth. You know, and Jurassic World had Chris Pratt, who is like the biggest, like the biggest rising movie star in the world. So, you know, you just have to consider some of the factors. And where was Will Smith? He was in Suicide Squad instead of Independence Day Resurgence. And Suicide Squad, in many ways, while you already pointed out the highlights of the summer, you're exactly right. But in many ways, it's going to be something I remember 2016 for, because I was really, really excited for it. I loved that Comic-Con trailer. It was great. It was really good. And all the trailers in between were good. But between that Comic-Con trailer and its release, there are obviously those very highly publicized stories about this movie being tampered with and having so many different fingerprints, and how DC obviously ordered reshoots and the movie clearly got lost in the editing. When you watch it, that's so readily apparent. It's insane. And that movie was a failure. You know, like, there's a lot to like about it, but ultimately it's just a big mess. And that, you know, that's the case with a lot of blockbusters, is that they turn out to be big messes. But what that movie had going for it was, despite it being DC, despite it being a superhero movie, it was something that we had never really seen before. It was something we weren't very familiar with. And people will point to Guardians of the Galaxy and how that worked, and that was a similar formula, and how Suicide Squad, DC was trying to make Suicide Squad its Guardians of the Galaxy, and it just doesn't work that way. That's fine. But I readily admit that its marketing worked on me at first, and then you started to notice the warning signs, and then you saw the movie and thought, okay, well, they lost it. They took their eye off the ball. But you're right. The big movies outside of Civil War, Finding Dory, the BFG, the ones that really worked, you mentioned The Nice Guys, you mentioned Popstar, which is really, really funny. And I've only seen it one time. I need to see it again because it's super funny, and I'm sure it only gets better. So I'm with you. It's not the best summer. In fact, not a good summer overall. So, yeah. It's not 2001 level. You know, I don't think anything will ever reach those levels.
Yeah, I think that's
again.
Impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, with Star Trek Beyond is one of the highlights of the summer, and I like Star Trek Beyond.
It is. It's the highlight for me. Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
When that's the highlight, and it's quite clearly, calling it the worst of those three movies is unfair, but when it's clearly the least good of the last three Star Wars movies, and that's the highlight of the summer, then I don't think you have the best summer. So,
well, I don't think that's true, but yeah, I'll admit that it's got some issues for sure.
You don't think what's true?
I think it's better than Into Darkness.
Ooh, no way, dude.
Yeah, we have a whole show where we talked about this. this is precise argument that we got. You and me got
like
into this
a year ago,
last
man.
Summer.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah. Go back and listen.
I've got a freaking one-year-old, dude. You know what that does to your memory?
Well, we'll leave it at that. I mean,
thank God I got to see Star Trek Beyond, you know?
Yeah, you probably
I wasn't required
That's
to remember
problem.
Anything about it.
You probably fell asleep. It's definitely it's a down year. And I had a point about, I can't remember what it was. I think I was just going to say that I think Star Trek Beyond was probably, should have been the May opener, because again, Civil War was a ton of fun in parts, but it ended with a big downer, you know, and it ends with, well, the villain wants to kill himself, wants to shoot himself in the mouth. And that's not a breezy summer opener for me. So I feel like Star Trek Beyond, which again, a big part of why I like that movie is just, I think just culturally, it's a movie that we need. And it's a really, really positive, happy, friendly movie that you know, probably would have played that role a little bit better. But I think this year we're definitely on the right track, though, right? I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 looks like a total bubblegum pizza, you know, Twizzler pixie stick soda.
Well, you have to be cautious about the sequel, the second movie in a franchise. When, you know, especially, like, look, I really like Guardians of the Galaxy, and James Gunn's clearly talented, and his cast,
seems so game. But I'm sensing a little going into business for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I just get that sense a little bit that they're very high on themselves. You know, when you call your soundtrack a set list and
yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. I'm very cautiously optimistic. I expect this to be one of the best movies of the summer. I really do. And I will hopefully be there this weekend. Graham's coming down from New York, and we're planning to go see this together. And we want to have fun with this movie. But I don't know, man, like with these sequels, especially after sequels of the recent past, many that we've talked about on this podcast, it just happens so often. This isn't going to be the Mummy Returns. I am in no way worried that this movie will be the Mummy Returns, but I've been burned too many times, you know?
It could very well be Iron Man 2. And I think that's a fair comparison where that movie it's a mark for itself. It's the same thing that happened to the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, I think, as well. So, yeah, I think that's a fair expectation and something that Marvel has fallen into before. When Iron Man 2 is your floor, that's okay, I think. It's not my most anticipated movie of the summer. I think that would probably be either Dunkirk or War of the Planet of the Apes, but I think neither of those are how I want to kick off the summer. You know, those are both pretty
Think Guardians is the right movie, just like on paper, like looking at the summer landscape? Is there anything else?
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you see that could be the summer kickoff? Like, could Wonder Woman be the summer kickoff? The Mummy? Like, so do you think this is the right call?
Absolutely. Like I said, this is you know, pixie stick, you know, cherry coke. It just looks, even if the script is the phone book and it's garbage, just visually, like, you look at the trailers for these movies and this is visually the poppiest thing of the summer. And I think that's exactly what needs to open the summer.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man Homecoming could have been a good option too.
Maybe, but I don't know. That just feels like, I mean, Franco and I get into it in our summer preview, but I feel like that, there's so much, it looks like it's retreading so much ground that it doesn't look like as energetic as something like this.
Yeah, well, we won't know until we see it, you know. But it's been fun, you know, looking back at all of these May openers, and I know in a way it kind of turned into like a retrospective of every summer since 1996, but really it all goes back to what kind of tone was set, you know, and like,
yep.
In many ways, the May opener can and will be the movie that you remember about the summer, you know? So I think it's interesting to compare what actually opened versus what we actually remember about the summer. And I think more often than not, when the May movie is what we remember, I do think that it tends to mean that it was a good summer, not that it peaked early, but that it opened well. And that's always a good sign when it's a good tone setter.
Absolutely. So just what's your handful of top May openers? You don't have to do a full official top five, but like what's your
top three? I've got a top five.
Okay. So, hit me with your top five.
I've got Twister. I've got The Mummy. I'm even putting Gladiator on there. I'm putting Iron Man and The Marvel Machine Wins Again. I'm putting the first Avengers.
Yeah. Is that your number one?
No. That was in chronological order. If I had to pick out of all of those, I'm either picking between The Mummy or Iron Man, and I think just for nostalgia's sake and the fact that it just like helped set the tone for me as a moviegoer and was just kind of like a coming of age thing to help me understand the May opener process, I think The Mummy is my number one.
Yeah, I think that's a fair pick. I think I've gone Avengers, The Mummy in order. Avengers, just because it's like the culmination of so much summer, and kicked it off too well almost. Avengers, The Mummy, and Iron Man are, the clear top three. Star Trek 2009 is not a May opener, but I feel like that should 100% be in the conversation because it is what it should feel like. But yeah, I think those three are the ones that, and I think Twister should definitely be in the conversation too. Those three, four, five movies there are the ones that's like, okay, when I say May opener, that's what I mean. And I guess we'll see if Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is in that conversation. So we'll do this all again next year.
and just reiterate everything we said, except we'll just talk about summer 2017 too. Sound good?
Sounds good.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.